You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
And a guy who's been on top of the story is Scott Soschnick, who is from Sportico and has covered this inside and out. And he's good enough to give us a few minutes here to help provide some context. Scott, Chris Carlin here on 98.7 ESPN. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. All right. Tell us where we are here, because you had newcomers in the mix, a pair of brothers, if I'm not mistaken now, who have emerged as potential bidders for the Mets. First of all, where do we stand in the entire process from what you can gather?
Because you were talking baseball, should we go with the baseball analogy and say we're in like the second or third inning?
Sure.
We are not near completion here. There can be more people in. They are not even talking really to the team or any sort of business meetings yet with the different departments of the club. All these prospective bidders, and notice I put that word prospective bidders in, because nobody has made a bid yet. Nothing has been accepted. This is still early in the process where folks are sort of expressing their interest and doing their due diligence on their own, whether they hire a banker or not, and they get some assistance in it. But you just have folks tire kicking right now to see if they want to move on and then actually wind up making a bid down the road.
Okay. Tell us about the newest group that has shown interest.
The Rubin brothers. Yeah. Born in India, raised in London, big into real estate, private equity, technology, combined a net worth, the two brothers, of $14 billion. I've been told that what piques their interest is the real estate possibilities in and around Citi Field. So take that for what it's worth. My guess would be that they're more tire kicker than actual bidder. You look at the other groups right now that obviously are involved in pro sports. They see some synergies. We all know the Mets lose at least $50 million a year in a normal season. Forget about coronavirus. Forget about shortened season. Forget about no fans in the stands. Before all those other impediments, the Mets are losing money. What you're going to need is an ownership group that understands operations, that has figured out a way with operational expertise that they can make this work. That's what everybody's looking at right now.
All right, when you say they lose $50 million a year, separate fact from fiction here. How much the Mets owe still on the stadium, what their major financial impediments are right now?
Yeah, I mean, they do have to make bond payments on the stadium. They have a $250 million loan that they just look to push out for a year. And don't read anything into that. That is not to say, oh, the Mets are in financial distress. This is not the Madoff year. This is actually, from all the bankers I spoke to, this is actually a prudent move. Why not push out the term 1 year if you know you're undertaking a sale process in what is an unprecedented time? You are asking bidders to come up with a valuation on a team based on the year prior's numbers, because this year you can throw out the window. It's obviously any profit loss statement this year is going to be an anomaly. So you got to figure out, what would it be in a normal season? What changes operationally can I make? Are there chances in real estate, technology, media? These days, nobody's buying a pro sports team. Like, this is not 1979. Where you plunk down 40, 50 million bucks and say, hey, I own a team in the big league. That is not what's happening anymore. These are sophisticated businesses with sophisticated investors like Vinny Viola, like Josh Harris. They will line item and figure out, am I in the black? Am I in the red? And how do I work this as part of a bigger project? The teams are tent poles for other entities, whether they are incubators, whether they're tech firms, whether they're real estate, media. They're just a piece of a bigger part of the puzzle.
Scott Soschnick from Sportico, who has been covering the Mets' potential sales story from pillar to post. Okay, so the $250 million that you were just talking about, a potential bidder takes on that debt, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so would they owe any more beyond that on Citi Field? Would they own Citi Field outright? How would it work at that point?
Yeah, as far as I know, the sale right now is the team and Citi Field. Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody keeps asking me about the network. You know, what's up with SNY, the regional sports network? Because that spits off cash. Everybody wants to get their hands on SNY. From my understanding right now, the network will not be included as part of the sale.
Well, we know that,
as you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we know that the Wilpons want to keep it because they own 65% of it, and it is a cash cow when they're getting $4 a month per subscriber when there is a baseball season. I'm sure they're going to have to give back some of it. But nonetheless, we understand how much money that can make. How do you – can you 100% do the valuation off of last year? Because so many times you have heard so many people over the last several months speculate that, dear God, they should have gotten that deal with Cohen Dunn because they'll never get that number again.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I have certainly heard a number of people say they probably wish they locked that up. I'm not convinced. I've had some bankers ask me to throw out my prognostication, but as you know, this is very simple. This more bidders means more money. That is how these things work. Right now, on the runway that we know, you've got three groups, all of them multi-billionaires, which is what you need. What if I'm Jeff Wilpon and I'm Fred Wilpon, what I'm hoping enters the equation is the things that are intangible, that heart and emotion. Now, you think you're going to get that with Mike Rapoli and Vinny Viola, local guys, root for the team. You had that in Steve Cohen. Then you start to bring in things like the scarcity factor. You know this market, Chris. Tell me the next major New York sports team that will be for sale. Can you name one that you think, let's just say, let's give a conservative time frame. In the next decade, do you think the Knicks, the Yankees, the Rangers, the Nets, do you think any of those franchises will come on the market? I do not. How about you?
I don't. Maybe the Islanders. Maybe. I don't know. Because they've obviously got a bit of a mess.
With the new building, the economics improve. Again, that's part of a bigger piece of a real estate play. I would guess no there as well. So if that is the case, and you have an opportunity right now to grab a franchise, an asset, let's use the financial term, an asset in the number one U.S. media market, in an entertainment industry where the media dollar dictates and is only growing. We just saw baseball re-up with Turner, right? Did you see that number?
Yep.
Well, guess what the NFL is going to get? Hockey's coming due. They're all coming due soon, and they all going to get their payday. That's what you look at when you see, what can I do? And I'm going to throw out the old buzzword OTT, over the top, direct to consumer. The Yankees are hooked up with Amazon and Sinclair. They're going to deliver an app directly to Yankee fans all over the world. They can now scale this. It's not about just the tri-state area. No, that's small time thinking. Now tech allows you to deliver your brand to the world. How do I monetize that? What about direct advertising? Does each person watching your shoulder programming or your game, does that become more valuable because I know more about them because I have their data? I know that you need to buy a new bicycle for your kid, so I'm going to target a bicycle ad to you because I know you searched on it last time. So that's all the things that we're talking about these days. You can't just think of these things as, who wants to own a team and just say, oh, just a blank. Well, some make money, some don't, big market, small market. Josh Harris, I can guarantee you, is looking at this as part of a global portfolio of sports assets. He's got the Sixers, the Devils, he's got an arena, he's got an English soccer team. So he's looking, how can I do, what can I do with this as a piece of a bigger portfolio?
We're talking with Scott Soshnick from Sportico, who's given us great insight on potential Mets ownership scenarios here. All right, let's talk about each individual group. Now, you were just talking about Josh Harris, and you mentioned this latest group, both private equity. Those two words scare the daylights out of you, because it makes you think more than anything that they are not overly concerned about the team itself. How do we make it as financially viable as possible? And you know what fans are thinking. They have been thinking for the longest time, it can't possibly get worse than the Wilpons, yet they have been living in this bubble. When you look at the potential groups here, who makes the most sense for the Met fan to get what they're looking for?
Yeah, that was a pretty broad brush to just kind of paint private equity owners. I understand that, yeah, you have a sense that they're probably looking more at line item. And
well, but you're always, yeah, because you pointed that out, too, about Josh Harris. I saw him in Philadelphia. He bought the Devils because he owns the Prudential Center. I understand that. And I think in Philly they were trying to buy or were hoping to get the Wells Fargo Center to do some things around there but couldn't get it.
Yeah, you never want to be a tenant in the building you're playing in nowadays. You want the Holy Trinity. You want the team, you want the building, and you want the network. That's the Holy Trinity if you can get it, like MSG. But I would say to you, the counter would be, where do you stand on Joe Lacob and the Golden State Warriors ownership? Would you trade places with that ownership group? Private equity.
Sure. Absolutely.
They seem to have done things right, yeah?
I mean, yes, they have a gorgeous building downtown and all that stuff. Yep.
Do you know how many? Yeah, I mean, do you know how hard it is to get an arena built in downtown San Francisco? I mean, that's why nobody's done it. And by the way, they comprise their ownership group, and that's another thing that's happening with ownership groups today. Everybody that comes in, you're going to hear, oh, they're looking to bring a limited partner, right? They're looking to bring in a guy who'll be a 5%er for whatever X that pencils out to. What the general partners are looking at these days are somebody that brings added value and expertise. What do you bring to this ownership group other than the money? Because frankly, show me the person who's going to buy 5% that doesn't have the money. They all do. Do you bring technology expertise? Do you bring real estate expertise? Maybe you're a finance guy. So maybe if I'm the Golden State Warriors, I can figure out how to build and finance this new building in San Francisco, which is like almost an impossible thing to do, without going outside the family, which is what they did. That's impressive. That's what ownership groups are about today. Show me your expertise. Is it retail? That's fine, because you need that too. So if you can get a little bit from different disciplines, now you're talking. Now you're talking about a group that figures out how to operate the system without too much friction, which means more money.
Okay, but how is the fan looking at this? Is my new owner going to spend money on my team, especially after what they've been through over the last few years? Who, in your estimation, would be the most likely to do that out of the potential suitors?
Who would be most likely? If I was guessing who would just spend whatever is necessary to win.
It doesn't have to be Yankee money, but it has to be better than what
I understand.
It is. Yeah,
and I base this on nothing other than I think that's where it comes in hearts and minds. But like Mark Cuban told me after he won the NBA championship that year, he's like, well, I mean, it's a win. We won the championship, but I lost money. He's like, now I got to figure out how to win a championship in a season where I at least break even. You know, how do you figure out that? Then a businessman like Mark and the others is like, all right, now I've really done it. So if you're looking for the emotion owner who I believe would probably spend a little bit more to bring the winner. Right now, of the names that have been mentioned, I think you need to look at Vinny, Viola, Mike Rapoli, and the A-Rod group. Just because they're guys who grew up rooting for the team, and they do have the wherewithal to put the capital into the club. I mean, you're dealing with multi-billionaires, yes. But that's just guess. For all I know, they could wind up buying the team and then say, oh, no, that doesn't pencil out. We need to make money. We need to break even. We need to cut here. That could happen, but I just find it often when you're dealing with hearts and minds of people who grew up rooting for teams or were just such big fans of either the game, like Steve Ballmer, that they're more apt to throw sensibility out the window for a season for the chance to win that title.
Scott Soshnick with us from Sportico. A couple of more real quick before we let you go, Scott, and great job covering this story and giving us perspective here. When you look at the long-term viability of the New York Mets, with that being the primary factor, who is the best to purchase this team?
Oof. Boy, I don't think you're going to go wrong with any of these. If these are established professional sports team owners who have gotten the kinks out, who have worked out the mistakes, who understand the landscape. But of course, you know, Vinny Viola owns the Florida Panthers. So I don't think you're going wrong with any of these groups right now. And my guess is there's probably another one or two people that we haven't heard from yet. that are still out there toying around. And whether or not this happens, I don't know. But I'm sure you've heard all the speculation that, oh, Stevie Cohen is waiting in the wings. You know, he'll jump in late and try to get back into it. As of right now, I can tell you, Steve Cohen is not a part of the proceedings. Whether or not that the relationship there is so in disrepair that he was not welcome back in the process, I cannot answer. But I would guess that $100 million, $200 million more than the next closest bidder is a way to mend feelings. But who knows if he even wants to do it. Right now, I know he does not.
All right, Scott, when does this start to bubble? When does it really start to come together and the pretenders get separated from the true contenders in this over the next few months?
Yeah, you're going to start to hear things like second-round bids. And as somebody who's covered a ton of these, and we're going like the Clippers, the Atlanta Hawks, these processes, the Marlins, of course, but that was a special one in its own right. But you're going to start to see, all right, maybe one group that seemingly takes the lead, they'll pull in somebody else from another group, or they'll pull in another big-name limited partner or celebrity, a baseball celebrity perhaps, to join their group. You're going to start to see some of that. When you see that happening, then you know we're starting to get close. And it'll be clear that there is a round two. Everybody will proceed to round two, where then you're going to come with, if you ever sold a house, yes, for your best and final, That's when you're starting to get close. Hard to say right now, though, because it is not business as usual with this virus out there. This stuff generally happens face-to-face around a table. Management meetings occur. Prospective bidders talk to the different department heads of these teams. Do you want to do that by Zoom? If I'm thinking of spending $2 billion, do I want that to be a Zoom call? No. But if the world is not ready for that yet, then maybe that's just the way it'll have to proceed. So I would look for 2 or 3 months for this thing to really start to percolate.
And with all of that happening right now, what do you expect as far as, well, maybe it's not even fair to ask just based on what you said, but when it could actually get done? I mean, what's realistic with considering everything, when a sale would actually get done?
You have Allen and Company, and Steve Greenberg is running this process. This ain't his first rodeo. He's right. Sorted through many of these before. You have, again, sophisticated bidders who are undergoing due diligence right now. These guys are not toying around. They see an asset that they think they might want. They will go. They will do the numbers. They will run the numbers. They will come up with a price that they think is fair. Going back to the oldest adage of ever, you know, what's something worth? I don't know what the Mets are worth. What somebody's going to pay for it. That's what they're worth. You know, sometimes it's higher than you think. Sometimes it's lower than you think. If I was a betting man, knowing that these groups are here now and there's probably somebody else still to come, even with Josh Harris as a value investor, I would be surprised if, in the end, the Wilpons take too much of a haircut from where they were with Steve Cohen.
Okay. And then I guess the last thing I would say is, from what you can gather, they are in no financial peril at this moment where they have to hurry, even though considering everything that's happened.
No, the Mets do not need to sell this franchise. If for some reason, and it doesn't look like there is one or one will pop up, but if after the Steve Cohen deal fell apart, the Wilpons had decided, you know what, this is just a busted auction, it's a compromise process, maybe it's best to take it off the market, let everybody breathe, and we'll start down the road some other time. They could have done that. They chose not to. And it wasn't out of financial duress. They have the money to operate this franchise.
Excellent stuff. Appreciate the time, Scott. We will definitely have you again on the show as we move along here. Great stuff.
You got it, Chris.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.